who was the first patriarch, or bishop even for that matter, who attempted to judge the first see? That is the Holy See, the Bishop of Rome, the Pope. Do you know? Well, it was actually Dioscorus of Alexandria, who was Patriarch of Alexandria, who attempted to excommunicate Pope Leo the Great. And I want to briefly talk about this because I think there are some applications for our time and some lessons that we could learn from this. Well, there is a whole lot in the background to the controversy that takes place around this time at the Council of Chalcedon 451 and also at the Robber Synod in 449 in Ephesus, sometimes called the Ephesus II or Second Council of Ephesus. Again, Leo calls it a robber synod. He doesn't see it as authentic. There's a lot of controversy, a lot of background. I'll try to briefly summarize this and show you how this then led to Dioscorus attempting to excommunicate the Pope and what the fallout was from that action. So Dioscorus, again, is the Patriarch of Alexandria. He is dealing with, just as everybody else is dealing with, all kinds of Christological views that are competing views out there. We had just previously had the First Council of Ephesus in 431 that was dealing with some Christological issues, and some other things were unresolved, and there were people who were reacting against the decisions that were made, and they kind of go to the other extreme. And then you have a figure known as Eutyches, who was the archimandrite in Constantinople, or he was an archimandrite in Constantinople. And what he decides to do is put forward a view that Jesus has only one nature, as opposed to the Catholic faith that says Jesus is one person, two natures, human and divine. Well, he says there's only one nature, Eutychianism, or what's also called monophysitism. Well, his bishop, Flavian of Constantinople, or his patriarch, I should say, held a synod in 448, judging him and deposing him for this view. Obviously, Eutyches did not like that he was removed from office. And here, Dioscorus of Alexandria comes to his rescue. Alexandria had been competing with Constantinople, and Constantinople competing with Alexandria for a while. So here they square off, if you will, because the Patriarch of Alexandria is now attempting to undo a decision of Constantinople and the Patriarchate there. So he holds a synod in 449 in Ephesus, again called the Second Council of Ephesus, or more appropriately called the Robber Synod by Pope Leo the Great, since we don't accept it as an authentic synod. All kinds of shenanigans took place here at this synod. And what happened was Eutyches was restored by Patriarch, the Patriarch of Alexandria, Dioscorus. He was restored, and Flavian of Constantinople, the Patriarch, was condemned by Alexandria. Obviously, there were some major issues here. And in fact, after he was condemned, that is Flavian, they assaulted Flavian, beat him severely, and 3 days after the beating, he died from his wound. And so he is considered a martyr in the Catholic Church because he died for the faith and was unjustly persecuted. Well, obviously, this didn't go over very well with Pope Leo. He saw the shenanigans with the robber synod. He sees that Flavian is martyred and unjustly treated. And so he condemns this thing. He says, this is a robber synod. It is a fake synod. This is not ecumenical, even though the council itself identifies itself as ecumenical. He says, no, this isn't ecumenical. I'm overturning this. This is a robber synod. and as you can imagine, Patriarch Dioscorus of Alexandria did not like that. I mean, he had just been condemned by the Pope. His synod was just overturned by the Pope. So, he wasn't very happy. So what he decided to do in 450, shortly after Leo condemns his synod and writes what's called the Tome of Leo, fortifying and strengthening Christology and kind of setting the record straight and saying, here's what it is. Here's the truth. One person, two natures. And he puts that forward in his tome and settles the issue infallibly, according to Leo himself. So here's actually an instance of papal infallibility. Well, obviously, again, Dioscorus does not like this. So shortly after the tome was written and after his own condemnation of his own synod, well, as you can imagine, with egos and pride, the Patriarch of Alexandria decided in 450 to rashly judge the Holy See, to rashly judge the Pope, specifically Pope Leo the Great. And he signs a document excommunicating the Pope. So the first time in history where a patriarch attempts to excommunicate a Pope. No, Photius was not the first. There was precedent for this in Dioscorus of Alexandria. What was the reaction? What was the fallout? Well, I actually had an Eastern Orthodox come into the comment section not long ago. And they said, look, the only reason why Dioscorus was eventually condemned by the Council of Chalcedon is simply because he was summoned to come to one of its sessions and he didn't come. And when you don't come to an imperial summons to attend an ecumenical council after three times, you're excommunicated. And here's another case where an Eastern Orthodox doesn't know their own history and doesn't know their own councils. It's something that I see over and over, and it's also a problem with Catholicism, frankly. But it's also an issue in Eastern Orthodoxy. A lot of Orthodox, they just have a very cursory reading and understanding of their own ecumenical councils, the first seven ecumenical councils. Most of them have never read the canons, decrees, or sessions, you know, the actual acts. They've never really gone into that kind of detail. They just kind of have an elementary understanding of their councils. And so because of that, they end up missing some really important things, especially if they were to look into the acts of these councils, of their own councils, which is something I want to do today. We're going to briefly take a look at some points in the acts of the Council of Chalcedon, the Fourth Ecumenical Council in 451, because here you have Alexandria basically being responsible for the situation with Flavian, overturning the decision of Constantinople unjustly, refused to allow the Tome of Leo to even be read at Ephesus II. That's a problem. And then goes and rashly judges the Holy See. This was obviously a problem. So another ecumenical council is called by the emperor just 2 years after Ephesus II, 451, Chalcedon, where they have to try to deal with this issue and all the chaos and all the confusion. And they meet. Dioscorus actually attended the first few sessions. He didn't attend the later sessions. He attended the first few sessions and attempted to explain himself and what went down at Ephesus II just 2 years prior. And the wild thing is, the vast majority of the bishops who were at Chalcedon were also at Ephesus II, the robber synod. And they participated in the robber synod. So the fathers of the Council of Chalcedon, most of them were the same fathers at the robber synod. It's a little awkward for them, right? Because now they're coming after Dioscorus when they were part of the council. Now they try to explain it. They try to justify themselves and say, well, you know, Dioscorus in 449, he just wasn't really allowing for anybody to really speak, and they were threatening us. And, you know, if we didn't sign off on this council, the you know, Imperial Guards were going to kill us. And there it's comical to read the first session of the Acts of Chalcedon where they recount what happened at Ephesus. Because again, the same bishops who were part of Ephesus are now here at Chalcedon. They have to explain themselves, because here they're attempting to judge the patriarch that just 2 years ago they had sided with. And there are shouts all over in the imperial sessions here, you know, where they're just all sides are shouting at each other, and it's just ridiculous. It's the most obnoxious thing. They behaved like kindergartners. It was pretty. It was a sight to behold. Just read through the first session, you'll see what I mean. It's kind of shameful. But at the end of the day, they justify themselves, and they ask, you know, Dioscorus, explain yourself. He tries to explain. Here's what it was. Here's the situation. You know, I'm not really defending Eutyches. If he's a heretic, fine, let him burn in hell. I'm not trying to defend a heretic, you know. So he tries to explain himself in the first few sessions. But in a later session, he is summoned and he does not attend. And he says, oh, I'm sick. You know, I'm unable to attend. I'm ill. Well, again, there had already been a previous canon stating that if the emperor summons you three times, if you're summoned three times, at least through the bishops for an imperial council, if you're summoned three times to the council and you do not attend, you're deposed. That's it. You're done. You're removed from office. Well, this is exactly what happened with him. He was deposed. And Orthodox who don't really know their own history and have never actually read their own councils will say, see, that's all he was deposed for. But actually, there's more to it. It's a both and, not an either or. He was certainly deposed, that is Dioscorus, for failing to appear to one of the sessions of Chalcedon. But that is not the only reason why sentence was passed on him. This is what Orthodox often miss. And this is where we're going to learn a very valuable lesson. I am going to share the screen and let's take a look at one of the big reasons why he was condemned and deposed. All right. Now, this is from the introduction. I'm going to take a look here in just a moment at the actual session. But first, I want to read the introduction by Father Price. I've also had him on the show, by the way, multiple times. Okay. So the presidency of the council, actually, no, it's... Here it is, right before that, the council. One cannot understand Chalcedon without reference to Ephesus 2 and the backlash against it. The tyranny and violence of the robber council cast a long shadow over the bishops and officials who gathered for the new synod. The architects of Chalcedon sought above all to contrast their enterprise with that of Dioscorus, even though they were, you know, same bishops, in which they saw a perfect model of how not to run a council. The Alexandrian bishop, who only 2 years earlier had stood dominant over the Eastern Church, saw his position steadily unraveling as many of his erstwhile supporters took account of changed circumstances, and his numerous enemies now felt free to speak out. Dioscorus did not help matters when en route to the council. Here it is. In a final act of arrogance in the year 450, He anathematized Pope Leo, the last and worst of the misdeeds that would be charged against him at Chalcedon. And it's got a footnote here. Dioscorus's condemnation of Leo was cited prominently in the formal sentence pronounced against him by the papal legates. Those are the representatives of the Holy See of Rome. He had done this in the presence of some 10 other Egyptian bishops, probably while they were assembled at Nicaea in August or September. Well, let's actually go and take a look at that. What does the council actually say? Whenever he's being deposed, what is the reason? Is it merely because he didn't come to a thrice summons, as some Orthodox would have you believe? Well, if you look here, this is book two in Price's volumes on Chalcedon. You here see the papal legates are speaking on behalf of the Pope, the Bishop of Rome, because the Bishop of Rome did not actually attend any of these councils by tradition. The tradition was, since the first ecumenical council, the Pope was unable to attend and therefore sent papal legates or representatives. That tradition kind of remained for the rest of the ecumenical councils, in at least among the first seven. Okay, so they say, we intended, however, to be lenient towards those outrages and to extend to him appropriately the mercy we had shown to other bishops, even though they are found not to have had the same responsibility for the judgment. But he has greatly surpassed his first crimes with the latter ones. What was this crime? And had the presumption to pronounce excommunication against the most holy and sacred Leo, Archbishop of Great Rome. There have also been presented to the Holy and Great Council plaints of accusers full of various charges, and all those summoned a third time with a canonical admonition by our most devout brothers and fellow bishops, he spurned coming, held back by secrets, secret pangs of conscience. So what are they saying? They're saying there are multiple reasons why sentence is being passed on him, the greatest of which is he had the presumption to pronounce an excommunication against Pope Leo the Great, who is the Bishop of Rome. You can't do that. You can't judge the first see. This principle that no one judges the first see, no one judges the Pope, no one judges his magisterium. That principle is ancient, and it's found all throughout church history in the first millennium, and you're seeing it here at Chalcedon. You don't judge the first see. You don't pronounce excommunications against Rome or judge his magisterium or anathematize him or declare him a heretic or accuse him of heresy. You don't get to do any of that. The only one who can judge the first see is the first see. So a sitting pope can judge a deceased pope. A reigning pope can judge a predecessor pope. But that's it. Nobody else gets to judge him. And they even note this. Therefore, now, if there are Eastern Orthodox watching, I want you to pay attention to this, because this is where you often drop the ball. You'll say, no, Jesus is head of the church, not the Pope. Well, wait, you don't read your own councils. Therefore, the holy and most blessed Pope, the head of the universal church. Yeah, you just read that correctly. And this isn't the only ecumenical council that says this about the Pope. Multiple ecumenical councils say this about the Pope. Ephesus, Chalcedon, Nicaea too. As an Orthodox, you need to read your own councils before attempting to critique the Catholic position, because what you do is you come with bad Protestant arguments that you use against Catholicism, and then you don't realize those arguments are overturned by your own councils. The most holy and Blessed Pope, the head of the Universal Church. Did the bishop stand up and say, no, no, actually, no. They all agreed with the papal legates. Not one of them said, oh, this is heresy. No, they all went along with this. The Pope, the head of the Universal Church, through us, his representatives, and with the assent of the Holy Council, endowed as he is with the dignity of Peter the Apostle, who is called the foundation of the church, the rock of faith. So Peter is the rock. Pay attention, Protestants, who want to say, oh, Peter's not the rock. Oh, the church fathers don't teach that. You have an entire ecumenical council that says this. And the doorkeeper of the heavenly kingdom has stripped him of episcopal dignity, excluded him from all priestly functions. What remains is for the venerable council assembled to pronounce, as justice bids, a canonical verdict against aforesaid Dioscorus. What is it saying? It's saying this. Rome has already stripped him of his episcopal dignity. He's already done. He no longer has authority. Before Chalcedon, the Pope has unilaterally already deposed the Patriarch of Constantinople. And people say the Pope didn't have universal jurisdiction. Here's an example of it. He has already stripped him of episcopal dignity. Why? Because he attempted to excommunicate the Pope. The Pope says, I'm not having this. He's stripped of all priestly functions. That's called universal jurisdiction. Moreover, what they're saying is, now you bishops assembled here, you need to share in this judgment. You need to join in this judgment and show that you're on the right side. And so what's left now is for you to do the same and for you to issue a canonical verdict as an imperial council. Which they did. And if you look at the following part, right after the legates speak, you can see their response. Anatolius, who was, by the way, kind of team Dioscorus at one point. Here's Anatolius, the Patriarch of Constantinople, who completely bows down to Rome, by the way. Right after the council, it's kind of interesting to see how much Constantinople bended the knee to Rome when you read his letters to the Pope and the Emperor. It's kind of comical. Anatolius, who was again team Dioscorus at one point, of Imperial Constantinople, New Rome, said, I concur completely with the Apostolic See. Did he say, oh no, you're a heretic? No, 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 no. We can judge the Holy See. Oh, you're a heretic for saying that Rome is the head of the universal church. No, he isn't. There's only local churches. There's no universal church. I've actually heard that from some people. Or, oh, there's a universal church, but Jesus is its head. I hear that constantly. Well, your own council say otherwise, and your own bishops say otherwise. I concur completely with the Apostolic See. I too ratify the deposition of Dioscorus, formerly bishop of the great city of Alexandria, who has deprived himself of all priestly ministry by his complete disregard for the canons of the Holy Fathers and refusing to comply when canonically summoned a third time. They all concur with this. They all say the same thing. You can read through it, every single one of them. Julian, bishop of Cos, legate of the Church of Rome, metropolitan bishop of Corinth, Peter. Theodore, Metropolitan Bishop of Tarsus, they all concur with what the legates say. And they follow in the judgment. He's stripped of episcopal dignity. And they concur with the reasons. I concur with all the verdicts that the very great and God-beloved council has issued concerning him. Well, what is that verdict that he's to be deposed and stripped? Why? Well, you just saw. For multiple reasons. Yes, he refused to come to the council after being summoned three times. That's one of the reasons. There's a half truth to that, but it's a both and. It's also because he attempted to judge Rome and anathematize Rome, and you can't do that. It's all the above. It's a both and, not an either or. And the council fathers recognize that. Later on, at the 8th Ecumenical Council, 869-870, I'll read from its acts from the 7th session that harkens back to what happened with Chalcedon, harkens back to what happened with Dioscorus. And do they say, oh, well, he was just simply deposed for not coming after being summoned three times? Is that what they say? Is that what is in the memory of this council? Actually, no. What's actually in the forefront of their memory of Dioscorus, by the time you get to 870 and 869, with the 8th Ecumenical Council, Constantinople IV, by that time, their memory of Dioscorus of Alexandria still is he attempted to judge the Holy See. Now, you have Photius, the Patriarch of Constantinople, who eventually died in communion with Rome. So he went back into communion with a papal supremacist pope and a filioque pope, a pope who believed in papal supremacy and the filioque. Yes, yes, Photius died in communion with a papist and a filioque. You know, facts don't care about your feelings, as they say. I know some people aren't happy about that, but it's the truth. Okay, well, when Photius attempted to rashly judge the Holy See in 867, just like Dioscorus had done, he had attempted to excommunicate the Pope and rashly judged him. A council was called, 869, just 2 years later, to deal with this situation. The emperor and the pope need to deal with the fact that the Patriarch of Constantinople rashly judged the Holy See. Well, it's curious because in this council, papal supremacy is taught very clearly. And the East accepted it, at this time at least. And Photius effectively accepts the papal claims and dies in communion with the papist. But they're judging Photius here in one of its sessions, and they're saying what he did is not okay. You can't attempt to rashly judge or judge at all the first see. You know why? Because you're the second see. You're Constantinople. You're below. You're not number one. You're below. You're number two. You as number two don't get to judge number one. And they say, after a whole litany of condemnations and examples for why this is condemnatory behavior on part of Photius, they say, then the fourth great and ecumenical council so detested such effrontery that it condemned Dioscorus of Alexandria for failing to come to a thrice summons. No. Without the possibility of reinstatement, for he had the temerity and contravention of the privileges of the first see and of the rule already mentioned to put himself before his superior, even though he was inferior, and without recognizing the order laid down by God. So this is not an order merely from the way the cities were at the time of the Roman Empire. It's not merely that first is Rome because it just has a lot of martyrs, has a lot of great guys who died there. Peter and Paul just simply died there. Some cool saints died there. It's the seat of old Rome. No, it's more than that. The order is laid down by God. And it says, without recognizing the order laid down by God to pass a rash judgment against the bishop of a superior see, namely Pope Leo. So Dioscorus is cited as precedent to condemn or of condemnatory behavior. And they map that onto what Photius is doing. And they're saying, hey, this isn't okay. Dioscorus was condemned for this very thing. I mentioned this in a video the other day. And again, somebody just, Eastern Orthodox in the comment section, jumped in. This is misleading. This is disingenuous. He was condemned for failing to come to thrice summons. It's a both and. We're not Protestants. It's a both and, not an either or. It's that and he refused. Well, he condemned the Pope and then also refused to come to a thrice summons. It's a both and. So it's not misleading. It's not disingenuous. It's just another instance where Eastern Orthodox don't know their own history. And many Catholics don't know their own history either. You know why I say that? Because Catholics right now are repeating the same mistake, the mistake of Photius and the mistake of Dioscorus, among others. Bishops right now are making the same mistake. Bishops who are condemning the papacy of teaching heresy. That's taking place right now. Good guys, guys who speak about Jesus all the time, sitting in judgment of the first see. And when Dioscorus did this, and when Photius did this, they were anathematized, both of them. They were condemned by the Holy Fathers because nobody judges the first see. The first see alone can judge the first see. That's what you see with the Sixth Ecumenical Council. Pope Leo II judged his predecessor Honorius in conjunction with his brother bishops at that council. He ratified the council. But aside from a sitting pope judging a predecessor pope, nobody gets to do that. And that includes you and I. We might disagree with some of the private opinions and private comments of a bishop of Rome. We might disagree with some of those things. We might even express some of our concerns about some of the things that the Pope has actually taught. You can express concerns. But to sit in judgment of his magisterium and say, this is heresy, the Pope is teaching heresy, you don't get to do that. Because even the Patriarch of Constantinople didn't get to do that. Even the Patriarch of Alexandria didn't get to do that. They were condemned and anathematized for this. And if they're condemned and anathematized for this, how much more are you and I, as mere laymen, who in our YouTube proprios, you know, we get on YouTube and start anathematizing the Pope, or get on Twitter and start tweeting anathemas against the Pope, and he's a heretic. We're just as condemned as Photius and Dioscorus when they did this. It's condemnatory behavior. Our forefathers would not have stood for it. It's worthy of an anathema. And so for any bishop who is out there, any priest, any layman who is out there judging the first see, this needs to be a lesson that we learn from. Let us not just simply say, oh, you Eastern Orthodox need to know your own stuff. Yes, they do. And yeah, they don't. Yes, they need to learn their own stuff, but so do we as Catholics, because we're repeating the same mistakes that they made. The East slowly and surely broke off from communion with Rome for this very behavior, for condemning the Pope and sitting in judgment of his magisterium. And that is why we have Eastern Orthodoxy today. Well, we as Catholics are repeating that same mistake today, even bishops. And it's uncalled for, and it needs to be addressed. It needs to be called out. And we need to learn from our history before we continue to repeat history and introduce more schisms into the Catholic Church. Because believe it or not, that's actually already happening. We're already seeing the emergence of a new schism of people who are judging the first see right now. Hopefully this is helpful. Again, hopefully we'll learn from this. If you felt this was helpful, you feel people need to see this video, I need you to hit the like button, comment, and especially subscribe. When you do those things, YouTube's algorithm kicks in and it will share this with more people. So if you know that people are being misled right now and people are anathematizing the Pope and rashly sitting in judgment of the Holy See, and they're not in accord with the Catholic tradition on this matter, and you want them to be reached with some pushback, some opposition, and some guidance, please do your part by hitting that subscribe button, like, and comment so that YouTube will share this with others and it will reach those people. Also, if you want to support me, patreon.com/reasonandtheology is a great place where you can do it. If you join my Patreon, you'll get access to plenty of extra content and you'll be supporting me. Also, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to my GoFundMe and my PayPal if you would just rather use those platforms instead. Okay, well, I hope you all have enjoyed this, and I hope you all have a great day. We'll see you later. God bless.
Are you confused about how Catholic teaching authority works? With encyclicals, papal bulls, councils, and many other things, it's easy to get confused on what is authoritative and what is not. Fortunately, at MaximusInstitute.com, I have prepared a course explaining the magisterium from A to Z. Visit the website and check out the course Understanding the Magisterium for more information.
Hey everybody, just wanted to tell you about my new free ebook, Church Chaos: Biblical Insights for Confused Catholics. If you are a confused Catholic and you're thinking about leaving the Catholic Church, or you're thinking about converting to the church, but you see that there's a crisis in the church and you're just unsure, this is the book for you. Again, it is free. Just simply go to reasonandtheology.com. You'll see a pop-up that comes up on your screen. Just simply click on it and you'll put in your email and it will provide you the free PDF ebook right then and there. Please check it out if you're confused about the situation in the Catholic Church today. ReasonandTheology.com. Hey, thanks for watching. Don't forget to hit the like button and the subscribe button. See you next time. God bless.